This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It is good to have you along. Today's topic is a rather weighty one, but it's an important one. Suicide Prevention Awareness Month continues in September, and we are joined by Dr. Jennifer Yarnell. This Geisinger psychologist works in the emergency department there. She's joined us to give us some ideas on how to spot issues in people around you and how to deal if you yourself are having suicidal ideations. We also will be talking about the scope of the problem. Suicides have been on the increase recently in the United States. Thank you, Dr. Jennifer Yarnell, for joining us on the program today.
Suicide is really a public health emergency at this point. The rates are drastically increasing. There was a bit of a dip in the rates around 2018 or so. And obviously we can talk about the impact of COVID, but it's become an astronomical problem that I think is kind of, we're losing control over it, even though that we have avenues of support. I think the mental health issues are becoming so pervasive with limited resources. And as a society, the amount of pressures that people are experiencing at every phase of development, every level of socioeconomic status, suicide is becoming an outcome. And then sometimes it's very unavoidable. In other cases, it can be very avoidable. So it is a pervasive public health issue at this point.
Are there specific demographics that are being affected more? Is there, people of color? Are there a particular gender? Is, anything like that that stands out to you or that you've seen increases in?
I'm going to say yes and no. So, obviously, when we look at statistics tell us one thing. I'm in practice. I work in the emergency department. That's where my primary job is. So I see the patients coming through. So I have a much more qualitative or clinical view than what we see in statistics. So statistically, yes, we see higher rates in certain demographic areas. So rural areas, people of, minorities tend to have higher rates of suicide, completed suicide. However, when you look at people in general, clinically, that we see in our outpatient care, inpatient care, in the emergency department, when you see the patients actually coming through, you're seeing the reality of what's happening, and it hits every demographic area. We are seeing children at a much younger age attempting suicide. And it's very disturbing when you have a 7-year-old, 6-year-old, 11-year-old child that is coming into the emergency department after attempting a suicide. We also see it in the college population. The rates of mental health is increasing in the college population. So there's more depression, there's more anxiety, there's more self-harm, and there's more suicidal thoughts and attempts in the young people. In middle age, we're seeing the rates increase there as well. People under a lot of stress, the demands of life, again, untreated mental health issues, COVID, of course, had a great impact on people, the elderly population, we're seeing increases in that. So, while statistics tell us one thing, we're seeing it across the board. So, you'll see more completed suicides with men than you do with women. You're going to see more aggressive means with men than you will with women. So it's across the board.
Is there specific reasons you can identify as not bringing these numbers up so high, or is that just here's where we are? I mean, obviously, like you said, COVID had an impact, but is there something you would look at and say that's probably a big part of the problem?
Yes, I think it's becoming such a complicated issue. So there's not one, recipe or solution or, identifying specific factors. If you have a previous mental health issue, okay, and you experience multiple stressors, okay, you're at higher risk. If you lack a social support system, you can become at a higher risk. There's not any one specific factor. It's a combination of a lot of things. So you can look at social media. So social media, we know, is become the devil in disguise. You know, there's a lot of benefits to social media in terms of connecting with people. However, it's also an avenue for comparison and for bullying and for targeting individuals. So when a young person becomes victim of that, and they feel that is the definition of their, their future in terms of, you know, how they are viewed by other people, they may say, you know, I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this. And if they already have other risk factors, again, have their own, you know, previous mental health issues, don't have a support system, then they're certainly at higher risk. So social media has a huge impact on our young people. COVID, of course, you know, many of us are sick of talking about COVID, but the impact of being socially isolated, the pressures, how it affects people's jobs, their families, that adds a layer of really trauma to individuals that they now have to cope with, even though the immediate threat of COVID is gone. So the damage has been done for many people in terms of that social isolation. You know, so when somebody's contemplating suicide, they're in a great place of despair and loneliness. And when you add other factors such as social media or the impact of COVID or financial stress or relationship problems, grief, loss, a triggering event, you know, people are already, their resources are low. So their internal reservoir of their ability to cope with stress is already at the bottom. So you'll hear people saying, like, I can't take it anymore. If one thing happens, I'm done. You know, that's stuff that, you know, people might have said before, but now you have to take much more seriously because maybe they are done, you know, because they don't have that, like I said, that internal resources that they'll be able to bounce back or have that resiliency.
As far as your, you know, primary care doctor, has this become something they've more commonly addressed with everyone now just because there are so many people affected? Are we changing the way you just deal with every patient?
Yes, absolutely. So at Geisinger, I can speak for Geisinger since I work here. The primary care providers, in particular, if we're going to reference them, because, you know, people will have regular contact with their primary caregivers, they will assess for suicide and depression, typically prior to them being brought back into the room. Okay. So they have iPads, they're asked, you know, questionnaires. And while that's very helpful if people are honest, okay, but when people see questions about depression, they know what direction that's going in. So if they endorse these questions to say that they're feeling hopeless, so they're having suicidal thoughts, you know, that is something that their primary care provider, their doctor, is going to ask them about. So not, you know, it's helpful to have those screening measures. It's wonderful if people are going to be honest so that we can give them the care that they need. You know, you got to worry about the person who takes that assessment and is not honest. So it's about knowing our patients and paying attention. And sometimes that's very difficult to do, in treatment. So we have more screening measures. But again, I think one of the most effective means of suicide assessment is being aware of the risk factors in that person's life and asking the right questions in person.
How can you be sure people are being honest on these surveys? Do some come in with a concern that they might be institutionalized because the answers they're giving makes them sound too unstable?
I think the people that are going to be very honest about how they're feeling and able to discuss those feelings with their providers, I don't think that there's anything to really be overly concerned about if you're having that discussion with your provider to say, you know, I'm coming to you because I need help. I'm coming to you because I'm having these feelings. I have nowhere else to go with these feelings. what I tend to see too when I look at these assessments, if I see someone endorsing some of the items, you know, if the scale's on a 1 to 4 and they answer them at a 2, I'm going to ask those questions to say, hey, you know, I noticed that you're feeling like it's hard to get through the day. Can we talk about that? And if you explore those items with the patient, then maybe they're going to be a little bit more honest when they know that you're listening to them. And I think that that's the key, is that if you're going to someone who you trust and you feel that you have a good relationship with your provider, these are areas of your life that you can explore and come up with a plan. So because you are feeling hopeless and you want to, you know, you're thinking about suicide, doesn't always mean that you have to go into a hospital. You know, there's other avenues of care. You know, do you have a therapist? Do you have a support system? So where people, their risk increases dramatically is if they don't have anchors in their life, if they don't have people in their life that they can rely on and who can be there for them. Isolation is the one area that is going to push a person to do things to end their life more so than if they reach out.
What can people do to spot issues in the people around them? Do you tend to see, a rapid decline that, or is it something that's so subtle that it's hard to notice that there's somebody's having an issue?
I think that there's, you know, different signs. You know, sometimes people will, you know, if someone does commit suicide, you know, others in their life might say, you know, I can't believe it. I would never have known. They seem so happy, you know, so there are people who can hide it very, very well. Okay. If you know the people in your life and you see a change in some of their behavior and you see that them withdrawing, you know, maybe their work is suffering, maybe they're not going to classes, you see them becoming more depressed, you know, those are all signs that the person is struggling, okay? So they might not have a plan, but they may have those thoughts, we call them ideations, of feeling hopeless and not being able to cope with their life. So those signs are a little bit easier to see because you see a person, you know, spiraling down, okay? For other people, you might not see the sign. They may have decided that this is it and this is not how they want to live their life, and they've made a decision, and you may miss those. And that's not your fault. That's not your, you know, you're not to blame. You missed it. And that's going to happen. But what you can see is changes in behavior. And that's where you want to reach out and say, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, can I be there for you? Do you need something? Are you okay?
Just to make people aware of services that are out there, you know, without actually making an appointment. I mean, there's hotlines and so forth that people can, kind of get some immediate response to get them through a crisis.
Well, there are any number of things. You know, if your primary care physician is certainly an avenue. You know, for some people, they will utilize the crisis hotline. Other people may not. If they have a therapist, you know, discussing with the therapist, again, you brought up a good point. I think people's fear is that they say, you know, I'm really thinking about this. I'm obsessing about, you know, these thoughts that I have about ending my life. There's a fear that they don't want to go into the hospital for any number of reasons. Okay. They don't want the stigma. They don't know, you know, maybe the hospital becomes a place where it might stop them from doing what they want to do, you know, so you just don't know, but there's a lot of fear. People do utilize the hotlines. There's no shame in that. It's a support. It could get you maybe through that difficult moment. I think one thing that I thought was really helpful is, you know, oftentimes people don't have the words to describe how they're feeling. And if you even online, if you Google the word suicide, okay, what immediately comes up are resources. So there's a chat option where they have scripted responses for how someone might be feeling. Like one is, you know, I'm feeling pretty hopeless. I need to talk to someone. You could just click it. You don't even have to type anything. Another one is, you know, I have a plan and I'm really feeling serious about ending my life. You could click that. So there's that takes the pressure off of you trying to get yourself to type out or to pick up the phone. You're going to have an immediate resource there if you're really struggling.
Anything else you feel like we should add that would be useful to pass along?
I think for, you know, for many of the people who are listening, I think many of us are struggling. You know, I mean, it's depression, anxiety, you know, other conditions. Many people are struggling. They might not be at the point where they're contemplating. So that's the time where you want to start establishing anchors in your life. So, you know, asking yourself questions, you know, do I have friends that I feel I can talk to? What are the things that are important in my life? My family, my job, you know, my garden, you know, my dog, you know, what kinds of things bring meaning to my life? And those are the things that, you know, really, even if you're not in this place of despair, that you should just remind yourself that I have these things in my life that are going to get me through the painful moments.
Geisinger psychologist Dr. Jennifer Yarnell has been our guest on the WPGM Community Forum. We appreciate her helping us out with this heavy topic to share some useful information with our listeners about suicide prevention and making everyone aware of how to spot it in yourself and those around you. Dr. Yarnell, we appreciate you being with us, and we appreciate you, the listener, for tuning in. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the Community Forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.